For December 22nd, 2016, it's the Lullabot Podcast. Hey everybody, it's the Lullabot Podcast, episode 202. I'm Matt Cleave, a senior developer at Lullabot. With me, co-host of the show, front-end developer Mike Herschel. Hey Mike.
Hey, good morning Matt, how are you doing?
Good morning Mike. Hey, we're going to get some rest today.
Yes, I'm kind of sleepy.
Yeah, this is the Lullabot Podcast. We talk about all things Lullabot. Lullabot's a strategy design development company that does a lot of work in the Drupal world.
Yes, we do. What is Drupal?
Drupal is a PHP content management system that's been around for a while, and you know, Mike's dog prefers it, so we use it.
Both my dogs.
All right. It's early in the morning because we have a bunch of European folks on the phone, and it's late in the day for them. So we're starting our day, and we need some rest.
That's pretty good there.
You think so?
No.
Oh. So what are we talking about, Mike?
So we're talking about RESTful Web Services.
I told you.
Yes.
RESTful Web Services in Drupal 8. Why don't we just introduce the folks that we have along with us, and they can probably tell us a little more about it. The guy that I know has plenty of rest, especially with a small child at home. He's a senior developer at Lullabot, famous for being on the Lullabot podcast 5 times and the Drupalize Me podcast once. He's the maintainer of the Drupal RESTful Contrib module for Drupal 7. He's the professional sunbather from the tropical paradise of Mallorca, Mateo Aguil-Bosch. Hello, Mateo.
Hello.
What's going on?
Everything that you said was true. It's evening, I'm rested, and I don't need any more sleep.
Okay, good.
So next we have Sebastian Ziemsen. He is a lead developer at Amazee Labs, Fubby on Drupal.org and the web, maintainer of the GraphQL module for Drupal. You might remember him from version 4.x of the Drupal 7 Omega base name, which was pretty common. Residing in Zurich, Switzerland. Welcome, Sebastian.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Hey, Sebastian. Also, a prolific contributor to Drupal, we have D.A. Wehner on Drupal.org. He's a senior developer at Chapter 3. He is the most prolific contributor to Drupal 8 Core with almost 2,000 commit mentions. From Berlin, Germany, it's Daniel Wehner. Hey, Daniel.
Hi, how's it going in America?
It's great. The sun is shining in some places of America.
Yes. Next, we have a principal software engineer in Octo at Acquia. Octo is the office of the CTO. He joined Drupal.org at almost the same exact time as Daniel Wehner. Both are just over 10 years, so happy Drupalversary to both of you. Fourth most prolific contributor to Drupal 8, his second appearance on the Lullabot podcast. Ooh. We had him in episode 181 talking about the D8 caching system, the Big Pipe, and he is from Belgium. Welcome, Wim Leers.
Hey, glad to be here.
Hey, guys. Yeah. So let's just jump in here. As far as RESTful Web Services in Drupal 8, I know that there have been some work that's already been done as far as web services in Drupal 8, and that you guys are kind of leading an effort to make sure that more gets done. So let's just jump off and figure out first, what is a REST web service for a newbie if somebody isn't familiar with it? If you don't mind just kind of giving a brief explanation.
I'm happy to take that one. So REST basically allows you to get data out of Drupal in a way that is easy accessible, for example, via JavaScript. These days, a lot of websites actually use JavaScript to render out its HTML, and REST is one of the most common, or it's the only really way people these days get data out of systems like Drupal. For example, in most systems, we actually use JSON, which is the JavaScript object notification, notation, and that makes it really easy to deal with data from other sites or your own site.
So basically, we're just reaching out through some type of HTTP and just pulling down JSON, which is JavaScript. It's just like a text file with a big JavaScript object in it. Is that correct?
Yeah, and I would also add that that is a very good precision that we are dealing with text here. So we are taking our beloved Drupal entities, turning them into text, and sending them over to the wire from the backend to some kind of some kind of application or consumer of this data. And REST also has a bunch of let's say constraints that help set expectations, and that typically helps with the pre-building stuff that can be reused based on these expectations that get set by this specification.
Okay.
So when we expose our entities over these web services, the sky's the limit, right? That's kind of the idea. We can then, as we've talked about on previous Lullabot podcasts, build apps for Samsung TVs and other random devices that might want to use your data, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So Drupal 8 now has a bunch of web service integration that didn't exist with Drupal 7, like some stuff ships with Core. So what exists now, and why does that need to get changed and improved?
So one more thing I wanted to add to what is REST is...
Yeah, go ahead, Vim. Yeah.
REST is not necessarily a specification. Actually, it's not a specification. It's more a set of principles that you are able to apply and that many people apply in slightly different ways, but mostly compatible ways. REST is really just a way of accessing and manipulating data via HTTP with a common set of principles. And so Drupal has its own implementation of those principles to expose Drupal's data via HTTP. So that was just a small addendum I wanted to make. So your question about how does Drupal Core deal with REST? In Drupal Core, we basically have two separate modules that are very important in how it supports REST. There is a serialization module and the REST module. The full name of the REST module is the RESTful Web Services module. The serialization module itself doesn't do anything specifically with REST. It just is able to take an entity, for example, and serialize it into JSON, or serialize it into helpless JSON, or serialize it into some other format.
An entity in this case would be like a piece of content or a category or something like that, correct?
Yep. So an article node, a taxonomy term in the tags, vocabulary, any of those kinds of things, or users, or anything really. And so the serialization module is able to take a user, an article node, a taxonomy term, and turn it into a string of JSON. But then we still need to expose it to the world, of course. The world needs to be able to access it via some authentication mechanism and at some URL. And that's what the REST module then does. It's able to give you access to such serialized data. And you can configure the REST module to expose, for example, only user entities and comment entities and article entities, which would allow you to render an entire blog on the client side, for example, because you would have access to all the information in the article, all the information in every comment on the article, and all of the users that posted the comments and that created the article. And so using that information, you can then do what Daniel described earlier, which is render an entire blog via JavaScript, for example.
One of the things that I like about the serialization system is that it exposes a subsystem in Drupal that allows you to turn almost any object, any Drupal object, like being a node entity or any kind of entity, actually, or any other object into text. And then you can write your own serializers even. So if you're not satisfied with what Core ships with, it's really easy to add your own formats. Things like, I don't know, maybe you want your node to be turned into a CSV row. Comma separated values, you can do that. But you can also do the reverse. You can accept text and turn that into a node that then you can save, and that goes into the database or whatever storage you have set up in Drupal. So that part for me is really, really exciting.
Okay, and so that's all included in Drupal 8.2 core, right? So what is all in contrib? You know, what all can you download from Drupal.org and extend?
There's a whole bunch of modules, several of which Matteo actually maintains. There is, for example, the REST UI module, which makes it easier to set up the REST module, because the REST module in Drupal core does not have a UI. It requires you to modify configuration files by hand, if you will, and then import them. The UI makes it easier to do that sort of thing. There's modules that add additional authentication mechanisms, because Drupal core itself only ships with cookie-based authentication and basic auth, so HTTP basic auth. Matteo, for example, has a module that adds OAuth2 based authentication, and then there's modules that provide yet different things, like, for example, JSON API and GraphQL, which I think Matteo and Sebastian might have something to say about.
Yeah, so for instance, we have the GraphQL module, as Wim just mentioned. The GraphQL module is built around the language specification originally crafted by Facebook. It is built around the concept of fetching data through specifying exact data requirements in a JSON-like format, which is then processed and parsed on the server, and only the requested data values from JSON-like format that you provided as part of the request are filled in on the server side and then returned to the client. Makes it possible to also fetch deeply nested values from the Drupal data graph or any other system that you provide the GraphQL schema for. And it also makes it possible to resolve values with arguments. So I like to compare it to functions over HTTP, because you have a lot of flexibility with functions on the server side.
So you can use GraphQL to execute function server side that will return data. Am I understanding that correctly?
Yeah, that's correct. So Okay. Basically you provide a schema on the server side, and the schema has resolver functions, and those resolver functions can also provide flexibility through arguments, and those are also exposed in the schema that you can use on the client. And then you can, for instance, load an image in a particular image style, or you can load a text field in a certain format.
Yeah, that sounds pretty powerful. So I'm assuming the QL and GraphQL is query language.
Yes, correct.
Yeah, so yes. You can just kind of query the server through JSON-like syntax and execute functions to return down only the data that you need.
Yeah, that's correct. And that also has a major benefit above traditional REST, because with rich client-side applications that are consuming a lot of data, you can easily run into issues with the overfetching. For instance, we have just been building a huge website where the whole site is fetched, the whole data for a single site is fetched through a single query, a single HTTP request. And with serialization, or the normal serialization with the REST module, you just get so much data that the benefit of using the decoupled front-end approach would totally go away, because the payload of the request and also the payload that you get in response would be so big, it would not make sense to do it in the first place.
Right, and that is typically one of the biggest problems of doing the traditional REST approach, and that is because to do something that may seem very, very simple, like fetch an article, you want to display an article with a bunch of comments, and you want to have the picture of the author of the comment showing alongside the comment that they made, which is not terribly complicated. You have a lot of requests in traditional REST, because you need to get the article, and then once you have the article, you then can ask for the comments attached to those articles. And when you have each comment, you can have the ID to request the author, and then you have to request the image. So all these problems with things like GraphQL and JSON API, you can solve them by just making one single request and specifying all your data needs or your data dependencies on what you're trying to display, and then you have better performance, because then you can cache all that.
Yeah, with JSON API and GraphQL. Sorry, with JSON API and GraphQL, basically you have the servers providing resources through which you can fetch full data objects, but only those. And with JSON API and GraphQL, you basically move that responsibility to the client. So with both of these modules or the both of these approaches, you have the server exposing a schema or a possibility to explain, to describe data. But on the server, on the client side, you then have the responsibility of specifying explicitly what you want from the server. So the server publishes the schema and the client specifies its data requirements according to that schema.
Now you can do that in JSON API also in addition to GraphQL?
That is one of the main drivers of JSON API, to be able to craft this in JSON API is over the URL. It's like a query language on the URL. And you set up a little syntax, and with that URL, you get all the data that you need, and just the data that you need. So you don't have this overhead of getting like every possible field in a node when you just care about the title, for instance.
Now, in the current Drupal core implementation, is that how it's set up right now, where if I, you know, pull down, if I want some data from a node, I have to pull down every single field from that node?
Yep.
Okay. So is JSON API an actual standard? Is there like some standard body that says you can do this, but you can't do that?
JSON API, it is a specification in this case. What it is, or how I see it, is like an opinionated specification, like saying how you should be doing things to conform to this spec, so you don't have to argue how to do everything every time that you start a project that contains a REST API. They say that the JSON API spec is your anti-bike shedding tool. Because it gets out of the way so many things that I don't know about everyone else in the room, but I have been arguing how to do all that. So having someone to, you know, just standardize on that helps a lot in getting things done quickly, and also allows other third parties to build on top of the assumptions that your server or your Drupal backend or whatever backend is going to adhere to those specifications, and you get things for free by attaching to that standard.
It makes a lot of sense. So like, are we sure that we want to bring an anti-bike shedding tool into Drupal, because Drupal is kind of built on bike shedding? So bike shedding, if people don't know, is just when you might be talking about something and someone will just pick apart the minorest little thing, and then the discussion completely turns, and by the end of it you have a bike shed.
So it sounds like we can actually do a lot of things right now with Drupal 8 core and with contributed modules, as far as these web service modules go, but we need to make some changes, we need to make some improvements. Can we talk about what that work is going on right now?
So I think when REST was introduced in Drupal, some people didn't thought about the use case of actual like front end side JavaScript, but rather the use case was to like get data from one server to the other, which is the reason, for example, why every field is exposed all the time. Yeah. Also, another huge mistake was that actually nobody ever used it. So turns out when you actually use it, stuff breaks and stuff is horrible to use. So Vim was collecting all the various issues with that state in 8.0 and then continue to create this initiative. I think you can talk more about that.
Yeah, so what I've been doing is, so as part of my work at Acquia, I was asked to make Drupal 8 truly API first, if you will. I think that kind of summarizes it. And Drupal 8 has made great steps forward. It has the serialization system, which it inherited from Symfony. It's using the Symfony serializer component, which has its own peculiarities, just like any piece of software does. But it does provide a system that works so that we didn't have to invent our own. Drupal 8, indeed, as Daniel explained, catered to a particular use case, and the data synchronization use case, if you will. So the deploying content from one server to another, from staging to production, and maybe vice versa. And that's also why we have all the fields exposed all the time. But in actual use, it turns out that there were quite a few problems. There were developer experience problems where if you forget this one request header or omit this one field from the request body when you try to update a particular entity, then things break, which is okay. But then the error response is not helpful. It doesn't allow you to figure out what to change in order to make the request succeed. And that is a big part of what I'm working to solve. So about a month ago, we landed an enormous test coverage patch that made REST very, very thoroughly tested. So getting, posting, patching, and deleting entities via REST in all formats, so JSON and helpless JSON, and in all supported authentication providers, so anonymous, cookie authentication, and basic authentication. And so the combination of testing all of those permutations meant that we uncovered quite a few more problems. The good news is that we are now able to fix them without introducing more regressions because the test coverage ensures that we will not regress again. The test coverage is also ensuring that it's actually explicitly testing small developer mistakes. So forgetting this one field or forgetting this one request header, it should result in this error response that helps the developer towards a point where he can actually fix it. And so the combination of all those things means that we can now proceed much faster at improving the REST API, but it also means that things get better for everything. So not just for the REST module in Drupal core, it also gets better for the JSON API module. It also gets better for the GraphQL module because many of these problems are not actually in the REST module itself. They are in deeper subsystems. Some problems lie deep in the entity system, where a particular property of a field is not being validated correctly or something like that. There are problems sometimes in the request processing system where errors, exceptions, are transformed into an error response, an HTTP error response, in a way that loses the message, for example, that loses the error message, and so on and so on. And many of those problems, fixing them for REST means fixing them deeper in Drupal, which means fixing it for all the RESTful web services modules, so REST, JSON API, GraphQL, and anything else in the future. So that's what we're doing in terms of changing Drupal 8's API first and REST. We're fixing a lot of problems, and that makes things better for everything. And one more thing, I mentioned developer experience as a prominent thing. Another thing is that not every single piece of data is currently being exposed via the REST API. So some serializations have gaps, meaning that some data is not actually being exposed. So for example, if you have an article or a blog post that usually in Drupal uses formatted text fields, so texts that are that contain maybe even something like Markdown, but then upon output, it's transformed through the filter system to actual HTML. Well, that transformed output, you would have to replicate all the logic of all the filters that are used on the server side. You would have to replicate all that on the client side in order to render that into the correct intended HTML. And so that's one example of a gap where we don't expose, in this case, a computed field. And adding that would mean that it's suddenly available for the REST module, but also the JSON API module and the GraphQL module. So everything was working in a nutshell, but only if you did everything exactly right. And so now we are making sure that things work better when you're done do everything exactly right and guide you to do things exactly right. And in the process, also improve things for everything else going forward.
That sounds pretty awesome. So those developer experience improvements, they're going to land in Drupal 8.3, is that right?
We've been doing this for a while now, and in Drupal 8.1, for example, one developer experience improvement was, and actually a performance improvement was, that if you create a new entity, that in the response, you immediately get the created entity back. Before you would have, in Drupal 8.0, you would have to first create it and then get, so request the created entity again. So that would be two requests instead of one. In Drupal 8.2, we did something similar for patching, so updating entities. So the response for a patch request would now also include the updated entity. And then many developer experience improvements, many bugs fixed. And in A3, we'll have even more fixes. So we're we're trying to increase the pace of fixing things and improving things, and making sure that we'll have a fully solid and, in air quotes, best-in-class REST API as soon as possible. So for 8.3, it will be pretty good.
Many of the things that Wim was saying here kind of highlights the concept that he already touched about API first, and how in, for instance, in Drupal 7 at Drupal was very tied to the concept of delivering HTML, a web page. And Drupal 8, there was this whole initiative to make this more flexible and not make the assumption that whatever we were getting out of Drupal was a web page, a fully cobbled or fully constructed web page that was going to be displayed in a device. But instead, there was different extensibility layers in Drupal that would allow us to do things like deliver this in JSON format or XML format through a REST API and things like that. Although, just like Wim was saying, this may have not turned out to be an ideal implementation because we didn't use it that much and we didn't discover this. This is kind of the goal that that we have in the API first initiative. It is that HTML is just a special case of any of the formats that we can deliver from Drupal. It's a very special one. It's our probably preferred one in Drupal, because we are so used to make websites in Drupal. But now it's easier than ever to do so much more, not just websites.
So if we're going API first with Drupal, which is something I heard a couple of times from Wim, it seems like we would need to have a whole lot more accessible through REST. Is that, does that list expand as far as what we're wanting to expose?
One thing we currently don't expose is the entire idea of configuration we have on the site. So, for example, like the permissions of a certain user, like the roles you have, or even the views configured or something, which sounds like an edge case, but when you think more about it, it would actually allow us to write a Drupal app for Drupal itself. So, like, write an admin UI for Drupal itself, but we are not there yet. There are a couple of problems with that. For example, we cannot validate any kind of configuration yet. So you could like write something and then Drupal would just accept it, even if it's totally invalid data. But there's certainly the goal to expose as much as possible, if not everything, because that's kind of the term of API first, right? Means API should be first.
So is like an admin endpoints, configuration endpoints, is that on the horizon, you know, in a couple minor versions away? Or is that just something that's off the table?
Can you explain what that means? Or what
so,
do you
mean by- so there's been a lot of talk about like kind of doing a similar thing to what WordPress.org is doing, like the Calypso project, where they have kind of a single page app on the back end. And right now this is only under hosted service, but basically it allows like a better admin experience. And obviously a better admin experience is kind of what a lot of, I know Dries has of course talked about that a lot, is in order to do some type of single page app on the back end, we would obviously need to expose these configuration endpoints and do some of that work. Is that something we're looking at doing?
I think this is roughly what Daniel has just explained. So we're exposing as much as possible, but we are not there yet. Actually, configuration is exposed, but only for reading, not for modifying. So you wouldn't be able to, you would be able to create a UI that allows you to create content, because content entities, so things like nodes, article nodes, blog post nodes, taxonomy terms, all of those can be created just fine via the REST API. But configuration cannot be created, nor updated, nor deleted, precisely because we don't have a way to validate it, to grant authorization to a particular user. and validate what is being sent in the first place. So configuration system needs to be expanded to in order to support it.
But is that something that's going to eventually be done, do you think?
Yes, it would eventually be done, but there are quite a few hurdles, not in the REST system, not in the serialization system, but even in the configuration system, because it was not built with validation in mind, nor with authorization, so permission on a user level or a role level or whatever level. It was not designed with that in mind. So we would need to add that first before we can expose it. And once we have that, it's easy to expose. It's just that updating the configuration system in a backwards compatible way, that's going to be not easy.
Okay.
I think that having an admin interface, a decoupled admin interface, is interesting. But what I think that is even more interesting is having a good editorial interface, which is like a subset of a fully fledged admin interface, I guess. And that that editorial interface is something that we can have right now. It's just that we cannot maybe go and configure Drupal through a decoupled single page app, which I don't know if it holds a lot of value. Probably it does. But I think that just having this editorial interface is also very interesting. And that is something that, as far as I'm aware, doesn't exist yet, like a single page app that connects to Drupal and allows you to create content and have a sleek UI for that.
Okay.
We're talking with some of the most prolific contributors to Drupal about REST web services, where we are, where we're going. We'll get more coming up right after this. Hey, it's Seth Brown, the COO of Lalabot. How's it going?
I'm doing well, thanks. How about you, Matt?
We're doing great. And we're here in our normal promotional slot during the podcast. And we'd like to tell you a little bit about Lalabot.
Nice. Well, you know what I think we should give the lovely listeners of our podcast, Matt?
It is the season of giving, so let's give it to them.
Let's forego any kind of self-promotion and instead just wish everyone a safe and happy holiday. Thanks so much for your continued support.
Thanks, Seth.
Thank you.
Welcome back to the Lalabot podcast. This week, we're talking everything RESTful in Drupal 8. And we have a number of great folks on the line with us talking about that who are writing it and doing stuff. So I read recently that the JSON API and OAuth 2 modules have been proposed as experimental modules in core. What needs to happen? What's experimental about it and why?
I'm going to take that one. I'm super excited about this. So the JSON API and the OAuth 2 or simple OAuth modules have been proposed as part of the idea that we want to make decoupled Drupal thrive to be best in class. So you can do almost anything because this is where we believe that the future of Drupal is, or at least this is where I believe that the future of Drupal is, because this is where the web seems to be going. And these are two different tools that may be key in that, as I see it. One is JSON API. We've discussed that a little bit. And the second one is OAuth 2. And this is a simple module to turn Drupal into an OAuth 2 server, but not in the sense or in the common sense that people think about OAuth 2 from the top of their head. And if you don't know what OAuth 2 does, it's just an alternative authentication system, which doesn't require you to send your username and password over and over again along with your request. So what you get is using this specification, you get some tokens, and those tokens are used to authorize you. And ideally, this should be very transparent because there are many, many tools that integrate with OAuth 2, and that's what's great. So you can just bootstrap your authentication, like provide your username and passwords initially so you can get some tokens. And from then on, you just deal with these tokens that get expired. So in the case that they get intercepted, they are secure, etc. So the combination of these two tools will put us in a very good disposition to move decoupled Drupal forward and to build great digital experiences.
So they're being proposed as experimental modules. What's an experimental module? What needs to be done to put that in core? How long will the module be experimental?
Yeah, explain how that whole system works.
I'll try, but I'll definitely not get every detail right. So experimental modules in Drupal core, unlike stable modules in Drupal core, so everything in Drupal 7 was a stable module. Everything in Drupal 8 that is common and that was developed before Drupal 8.0's release is also stable, or almost everything at least. Stable modules are fully supported. There is an upgrade path that is guaranteed. We guarantee no backwards compatibility changes, breaks, no API breaks, that sort of thing. Experimental modules, on the other hand, they usually start off with alpha level stability, then to beta level stability, and then if they are deemed stable enough, they may graduate, if you will, to a stable module so that they're no longer marked as experimental. When you install an experimental module, there will be an extra confirmation step to ensure that the user is aware that he or she is installing an experimental module, which doesn't come with the same guarantees or the same support as a stable module. And so in doing so, what this allows us is to experiment more quickly, iterate more quickly, precisely because we can break backwards compatibility. For example, if there would be some internal in the JSON API modules implementation that is holding back, holding us back and is preventing a certain improvement from happening, then we can choose to break API compatibility. But that would probably be just, in the case of JSON API, be PHP API compatibility, and it doesn't really expose a lot of APIs there. But my point is, we are free to change it, to iterate quickly, to improve it quickly. And so the goal is, of course, to eventually get to a stable module in Drupal core. And if I remember correctly, you have two core releases to get it to a stable level. If not, it will be removed eventually from Drupal core. So if we add JSON API to Drupal 8.3, then it would have to become stable by Drupal 8.5, which is released exactly 1 year later.
So an experimental module is shipped with core, but yes. It's labeled as experimental. It's kind of like, this is the direction we think core is going to be going, but maybe it won't in the future. So use it if you'd like. Good luck.
It is a little bit like that, but it's more, we want this to be used by as many people as possible now. We want to have as broad feedback as possible now. And we want this to be vetted as much as possible in the real world, battle-hardened in the real world as much as possible before marking it stable. So that once it is stable, it is actually rock solid. And we can fully support it and are fully confident about it. And in the past, we didn't have this process, which meant that in the case of some modules in Drupal 7 and before, and a few modules in Drupal 8 as well, things weren't as stable as they should have been. So I think a fair example would be the REST module itself. In Drupal 8.0, it was not as stable as it should have been. And so the experimental process allows us to expand what Drupal 8 can do without breaking anything. And eventually it is provided with the same level of support. But it means that modules are exposed to many more people because many more people learn about experimental modules in core than they do about this contrib module that requires this extra hurdle to discover and install and keep up to date and so on. And so experimental modules make that process a whole lot easier. And they are indeed modules that we believe are going to be key for Drupal 8's future.
Okay, so it's not a foregone conclusion, though, that this will be accepted as an experimental module, correct? And if not, what needs to happen?
We need to have consensus by the community, essentially, just like for any other patch, if you will. So the community needs to be in largely in agreement that it is a good idea to add it as an experimental module. But also we need to convince core committers that this is a direction worth going to and an extra effort worth undertaking, that sort of thing.
Yeah, one small point, which is kind of important in general, is that experimental modules are meant to be experimental. So Drupal does not really support them, which means, for example, there's the workflow moderation module in Contrib and the content moderation module in Core. And at the moment, even content moderation is in Core, you should not use it. You should actually use the Contrib module because that is actually stable and is supported, and the Core module actually will change. So much, I mean, we are enthusiastic about JSON API in Core, for example. It means that there's at least one more year where you should actually use the Contrib module and just experiment with the Core module, as far as I understand the process.
So does it also mean that there's different policies for API changes, breaking changes?
Yes, so you can essentially change APIs as much as you want, as long as it's alpha-level stability. Once it's beta, it becomes more strict, and when eventually becomes stable, of course, it is as equally strict as everything else, which, by the way, does not mean that it is encouraged to break things all the time. It's, of course, in your best interest as a maintainer of such an experimental core module to keep every user along on with you on the journey, so to not leave them behind when you make changes. So ensure that there is an upgrade path and so on, but an upgrade path is not required. To get back to what Daniel was saying, I'm not sure that I ever understood it as that way. I don't think it's the intent for the JSON API module to continue to be used as like it's. I don't think it's the intent to continue to use the Contrib module of the JSON API module. I've not heard this before, so I'm fascinated.
Yeah, I'm also fascinated because I made decisions for sites to use content moderation, the module, when 8.2 came out, and it was actually a wrong decision because the API changes now, and actually the data model changes, so that's less of an issue for JSON API, of course, because there's nothing stored. But maybe for OAuth 2, we store something, and it's a weird thing, experimental modules.
Well, experimental modules that store or manipulate data are definitely much harder to deal with, because what is going to happen with the data after the experimental module was removed from Core, or once it has an upgrade path that cannot really be applied automatically without user decisions, that sort of thing makes it much harder. But as you said, for JSON API, that's not going to be the case because it's just exposing data. And another example is the BigPipe module, which also doesn't store or configure anything. So it's very easy to make that sort of module into an experimental one. But I wonder actually what Matteo, since he's the author of the JSON API module, what he thinks about the Contrib versus Core experimental.
Right. So my first thought is that if it any of those two modules need to, if they went in as an experimental module and they needed to be removed for some reason or another, it's not like the users are stranded and forgotten and this is completely vanished. This will just move back to a Contrib module, which you will use as normally as we used C-tools in E7 as if it was part of Core because it was pretty much in every site, right? So you could use it as a Contrib module. But that being said, I don't think that for these particular instances is such a big deal because we only proposed these modules, and now I'm thinking especially about JSON API, after we made sure that we gave it a good review and we thought that this is the API that we want to ship. And sorry, and this is confusing because I said API and we are talking about REST, but this is the version that I want to ship, and this is not going to be there is not going to be any backwards compatibility break in the process. So we made the decision to hold off before proposing this. So we felt that we were in a good spot. So ideally, there should not be any difference between what goes into core and what becomes the contrib module in the future. So using any of those should be just the same.
Is there an issue in the issue queue about making these modules experimental modules?
Yes. So there is this project called the Drupal Core Ideas, and that is the actual workflow to get something into making it as an experimental module and to validate your idea before you get into getting a lot of work done and not knowing if it's going to make it through. You just go there, post, and get feedback from people that can make these decisions. So there are two issues created, one for JSON API and one for OAuth2. And please feel free to go there and comment things like, I don't think that JSON API is such a good idea, or I think that is the best thing ever.
One thing that I'm wondering about is, do you have any concerns that once these modules go into Drupal Core, that although that I'm sure that there's a higher bar for quality assurance and, you know, just the additional barrier of having a core committer review it and merge it, do you think that progress might slow down a little bit? Or how are you going to work around that?
I mean, that is essentially true. It's both a good and a bad thing, I guess, because every detail will go through many more eyes than it is right now, because there are several key contributors to the JSON API module, but it's not nearly in the numbers that it will be if this ever becomes part of the core workflow. So that is a good thing. But the counterpart, the bad thing is that it definitely gets everything slowed down. And that's why we kind of waited until I felt comfortable with what we are submitting. So I know that the things that I wanted to make sure that we're in a particular way, they are in, and we now can discuss on something that is already built, which is kind of simpler than deciding on what to do first and then do it and then redo it. And I think that's what you were getting at, right?
Yeah, so in general, you're saying that in order to submit something as an experimental module, you'd propose to always wait until the first major stable version is done and then submit it and then slowly iterate on it in core?
I was going to say, my understanding of the just proposing within the ideas queue is that even if you don't have a module and you have an idea, you propose that idea and then you can get sign off from the powers that be before you actually invest the time. Now, obviously, you know, Matteo has put in the time within the REST API module because it's going to be a contrib no matter what. Am I understanding that correctly?
Yep. Yeah, okay. The intent is definitely so that the intent is definitely to avoid that people propose something, are extremely excited about it, and spend weeks, months building it, only to find out that eventually when the patch is under review for Drupal Core, that it's doing things X and Y, which make it unsuitable for Drupal Core. So the intent is definitely to avoid doing all that work. But as you said, in the case of JSON API, Matteo has already built a contrib module. And so in that case, it's a lot easier because you can see how it's built and what its intent is and so on. So it makes things easier, but you shouldn't go and build some big thing if you don't need it anyway. If you need it anyway, then you might as well build it in contrib first and then consider polishing it, if you will, for Drupal Core. But don't just do that always.
Yeah, I think one major use case for the ideas queue will be important if there will be like major rewrites again, not just, you know, an additional module or an additional theme, but rather, I don't know, the idea to, for example, render Drupal in JavaScript instead of in, or using Node as backend. instead of
you're opening up a can of worms right there.
But I was just joking. But rather, you know, like fundamental ideas, those are the ones where the idea queue will be much better, because like you can't implement that in Confib. You need to do that in core to really get it done right. But you also don't want to waste time. Okay.
So right now it seems like that the API is almost kind of an afterthought where it was added. How can we make Drupal follow the API and not as an afterthought? I mean, obviously, including those modules in core will help, but is there anything else within the process or anything else that needs to be done?
I believe that thinking of Drupal as an API consumer itself, so basically executing HTTP requests to render the frontend, is not the thing that we are talking about here directly, but instead the systems that are producing the access layer to make these APIs, or the same access layer that is also used by these API modules, like JSON API or GraphQL, would be the right approach here. So making sure that also when rendering through Twig, we're accessing the data through the same services, through the same layer.
Okay.
Yeah, so to add a little bit to that, I think it's mostly in the layers that are the entity system, the typed data API, the configuration system, the configuration entity system, those kinds of systems, the parts of Drupal that really deal with data, because API first means interacting with data in the case of Drupal, because Drupal really is a content management system. Content equals data, so the APIs interacting with data are the ones that should be built in such a way that they can be exposed in an automatic way. And for example, in the case of the configuration system, we have one thing that is missing, which is validation. That's a very big thing that is missing. And why is it missing? Because just like the entity system in previous versions of Drupal, the validation logic for what is being configured lives in forms. And it doesn't live in the API itself. And so that is a problem then that we would have to solve. And solving it means changing it significantly, which means that in that respect, so the configuration system, it's kind of an API second and not an API first thing. And it's specifically in those parts of Drupal, the ones that deal with data content, that we need to be more careful. But that still doesn't, I think, fully address how to do the dog fooding part. And that is a very difficult matter. Maybe Daniel has some thoughts about that.
One thought regarding the API first aspect, we have a thing called core gates, which are basically a set of common goals you need to apply to when you want to get something into core. For example, everything has to be accessible. Everything should be performant. Many of those gates exist, like it should have also documentation. Maybe we should like add the point of API somehow in there. So, like when you do something, you need to think also about the API implications of what you do.
Maybe so if you store something, it needs to have that API first gate or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. Or maybe there should be an example even provided when you add some kind of storage mechanism, how to get it out.
Right. Yeah. An example of an API call via HTTP showing how you can do the same thing that the PHP API allows you to do, how you can do that same thing via REST, for example.
Yeah. You have documentation how to save an entity, then there should be like in parallel documentation how to save an entity via HTTP. But that's just an idea.
I believe I wouldn't go that far. I'll just make the requirement or add the requirement of exposing the data as pure data through some sort of service. Having the requirement of HTTP, that somehow implies, again, a particular implementation of an HTTP API. So I would just really make the data accessible.
And so one of the architectural constraints of REST is that it needs to be in a client-server model, meaning that you basically should not make any assumptions of what is the consumer going to look like. And in this case, I think that having that in mind would help for every part of core, because it seems like when Wim was describing the problems with validation, we built the validation in having in mind a form in a web page that was going to submit that. So if we took a step back and not assume like this is going to be managed through whatever consumer, we would be in a better position. But you know, sometimes things are built in the ways that that take us to these paths.
Yeah, exactly. I wanted to stress that at one point in this call, the REST API, for example, the configuration system that we're talking about quite a bit now, yes, there are maybe oversights or unfortunate gaps, but we have to always remember that those things were built with the best of intentions and under a set of constraints and time constraints and a limited number of people. So it's normal that there are oversights. I think we all forget some important aspect and then eventually curse ourselves, but that's just normal in the software world and really anything that involves building things. So it's just something that we need to be better about and try to improve upon.
Yeah, it would be pretty sad if software would be actually complete, because then we wouldn't have any jobs anymore. So it's good that
Yeah. On the front end development side, I think of that sometimes. Everybody complains about the state of JavaScript changing, but at the same time, it makes it exciting.
I think that one of the biggest problems that we face when dog fooding is that we, at this moment, we already have a way of doing things, and it is not using our own API, but the justification of rewriting that so we use our API, while is there's the good win of proving and battle hardening our APIs, like justifying all that work just to deliver the same feature, like the same porcelain but different plumbing behind it, is kind of difficult to justify all those efforts. I think it's going to be difficult unless we start building new features using our own APIs.
What I also would like to add is, if you look at serialization, normalization, that is actually what I want to have in all places, because that approach of decoupling, of channeling content or channeling data through some sort of mechanism, to produce a different type of representation, that is actually what we are looking for.
So guys, if someone were building an API right now on Drupal 8, what tools should they choose?
I think the answer is, unfortunately, it depends. I don't think
that sounds like a pretty normal answer. Drupal answer. I don't know, it depends.
Yeah, I'm afraid that's true. I guess it's a pretty normal programming and specification options, as in choosing between different specifications answer. But I think the best way to frame this is to explain how they relate to each other. So REST, JSON API, and GraphQL are the three ones that we're talking about. And I think you can see them on a spectrum, basically. REST is the most restful thing. JSON API is still restful, but allows you to do things on a non-per resource basis. So REST is strictly, everything is a resource and you must always interact with the resource in full, so including all of its fields, for example. JSON API removes that strict need and gives you more flexibility in filtering and following relationships and so on. And GraphQL, then, it goes even further and it has its own mechanisms entirely. So I think REST is more restful, less prescriptive, but it has more requests, but it is also more HTTP cacheable, precisely because it's layered directly on top of HTTP. Every response is something you can, depending on the authorization stuff, of course, the use authentication mechanism, you could perfectly cache every single response and have and reuse all of the HTTP caching infrastructure. And JSON API still allows you to reuse all of that caching infrastructure, but it also allows you to do fewer requests because it has that built-in capability of collections and filtering and sorting within collections and so on. REST is the least prescriptive, the most HTTP-like, And GraphQL has the most complete specification. It has a specification that covers just about everything. And JSON API kind of lies in between. And it kind of depends on the project that you have, and it depends on the libraries that you are using, the frameworks that you are building on top of or interacting with. Maybe it's easier in your particular use case to interact with full resources, in which case Core REST is probably a good choice. But if you are dealing a lot with collections and still want to have everything RESTful, then probably JSON API is a better choice because it is great for dealing with collections and only retrieving part subsets of resources. And if you want full flexibility, but then assume more responsibility in terms of caching and that sort of thing, then GraphQL may be a better choice. So I know this is not the ideal answer. It's not a if X, then Y thing. But I think that's sort of the spectrum you have to look through or via to make a decision.
And sometimes it may even be the case that you can use any of them, and it's just a matter of resourcing. The people that you have available for that project know very well how to work with GraphQL, and then you work with GraphQL. Or maybe you have a very clear mindset on using React and Relay, then GraphQL again is the best option. But if you want to use Ember, Ember.js, maybe you should go with JSON API if you don't care about what transport you want to use. So there are like a gazillion constraints, and the technical constraints are just one dimension of that. It's basically a good problem to have, I guess, that we have these very good three options, and you just can choose.
I'd also really like to stress what Matteo basically just said. In the React ecosystem, you have very strong support for GraphQL through Relay or Apollo. In Ember.js, you have very strong support for JSON API. So going against the flow and choosing a different technology while working with these front-end technologies might not suit you or might not be the best option for you, because it's just going against what other people are developing in the open source community is never a good idea.
Right. I just want to add that I'm sure that this is also true in reverse, but we've built build projects using React and JSON API. So even though you get a few libraries to get work for free done, you can do it. And you still have the flexibility, because this is decoupled Drupal, and you can choose your front end, even if you don't choose like the perfect twin match.
How does JSON API and GraphQL work with caching? We mentioned that REST was pretty cacheable, as you know, it's a distinct HTTP request and a response to that.
Yeah. So for GraphQL, this is quite tricky because we have cache tags now in Drupal 8, which is a great improvement. And however, the problem is, since you do not expose specific resources that you can cache the same way as you also cache the content or the rendered pages in Drupal, we have to actually build cache tags or bubble up cache tags as we are resolving our queries, particular for that specific query that you just sent. And since every client application that you have, or even based on the form of the request, maybe because the user is, authenticated differently than another user, you always have different queries. They're resolved differently. And so the cache tags that are produced during the query are also different. And that comes with a few challenges. And also because GraphQL requests are very large, because you try to aggregate the whole request in one gigantic, or the whole data requirements in one gigantic request, it means that you might end up with 200, 300 cache tags. And then also some CDNs run into their limits regarding the cache tag header sizes and so on. So there are a few more challenges that you have to take care of when working with caching on GraphQL, for instance. And I can imagine that JSON API is running into the same problems.
Right. So one of the challenges that Sebastian was was highlighting here is the fact that now we are getting a whole data tree back using GraphQL or JSON API. So if I cache that response, again, with that example about the blog post with the comments and the author's picture, what if I cache that response and then one of the authors changes their picture? Then that whole response for the blog post is cached, and that is not reflecting on the front end. So you need to add to the response of the blog post with comments, etc. You need to add all the tags that will invalidate the whole page or the whole data object that you get back from the API based on every little possible change that may happen. So that's the problem. In the JSON API, and this may be very specific to the implementation, but since we are building this data tree recursively, because this can go on to no end until you exhaust the resources of your tuple installation, you could request every single node in a single request with every single comment, etc. Since this is built recursively, we just have to bubble up in these recursive requests the cacheability metadata that needs to be added in the response. So at the end, it is wise to also experiment with this kind of outputs because sometimes doing three requests will be more performant because you will contain the cache hit ratios. You will have higher cache hit ratios for two of them, and then the third one may change, but it's less important, or you don't have to show everything all the time and all that. So there is a mastery when it comes to this, but this is like pretty specific on when you're optimizing a site.
Awesome. Hey, thanks, guys. Really interesting topic today, if we don't mind just kind of going around the horn and getting some final thoughts. Daniel Wehner, what's exciting you these days? Any other thoughts you wanted to add today?
I don't know. No, nothing really, to be honest.
Everything's exciting, right?
Everything is exciting. That's the entire problem.
Mateo?
Well, I'm pretty excited about the proposal of these two experimental modules, and I'm also very into, because of all the projects that I have, Node.js and how to build proxies for these awesome APIs that we're building.
Sebastian Simpson, any final thoughts?
Well, I'm really excited about the evolving front-end technologies, Reason, OCaml, Elm, React, and how they work with Drupal and, yeah, through GraphQL or whatever means.
Awesome. Wim Lears?
I think it's really exciting that Drupal 8 is going in a direction of being the only CMS or platform or whatever you want to call it that provides access to data via all of the mechanisms. So both traditional REST, JSON API, and GraphQL, because the intent is definitely for eventually GraphQL to also end up in Drupal core. And at that point, you could literally hook up anything with Drupal 8 and have it work in your preferred way.
Mike Herschel.
I'm excited about semantic versioning and kind of making this all possible. You know, in Drupal 7 land, we would have to wait to Drupal 8 to get this in core. Now we have that 6-month release cycle where we can throw in new functionality and bug fixes and additional APIs and stuff like that. And I think that's just making Drupal that much more awesome. Now, what about you, Matt Cleef?
Web services make the world go round. I'm excited to see these smart folks, doing such great work.
Absolutely. Well, thanks, everybody.
I'd actually like to change my comment and second what Michael said.
Drupal After Dark.